Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. I am joined today by Angela Schneider. She and her family are involved in the Mito Action community, and it was just happenstance that we met at a mitochondrial disease conference last year. We sat next to each other at lunch and we connected, and we have, you know, some similar threads and similar things, you know, that we share in common. And it was so good to meet her and to make this connection. And we've kept in touch since the conference. And her family, again, as I said, is involved in Mito Action. And I am really glad that she's here to tell her story today. She has so much to share with us. And I welcome you. Welcome, Angela.
Hi, good morning, Marcy. Thank you for having me. I feel so blessed to have met you and to have this opportunity to share our story with you and your listeners. Thank you.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I think you have a lot to share, and I'm really looking forward to everyone getting to hear it. So, Angela, tell us about your beautiful family and how you all are connected to mitochondrial disease.
It's my husband, Anthony, and myself, and we've been married almost 15 years, and we have four beautiful children. Reese is about to be, is 17. Olivia, our little mito warrior, is 13. We have Mia and Rocco. Mia's 11 and Rocco just turned 9. And they're such supportive siblings. And with Olivia being diagnosed with the mitochondrial disorder, they become such compassionate, empathetic children. I'm just proud of them every single day.
It probably gives them a new lens on life as siblings.
Yes, it really does. It's lessons that you just can't really teach in school. It's just so they've become closer as siblings and more supportive and just more empathetic, even when we're out in public and we run into any people with disabilities or handicaps. They're always holding the door for people and just helping. They know the struggles because they live it every day. So
tell us a little bit about Olivia and her diagnosis and what that journey was like.
Okay, Olivia, from when she was born, we were having some issues. They thought she had IUGR with the growth restriction, but she was born and they induced me. It was a failed induction. Then we went back, and then going back basically to her birth, she had heart, a couple things that popped up. They thought it was just Still's murmur. But then as we went through her toddler years, she just wasn't making her milestones. And I remember even as a toddler, she had to have Pediasure like several times a day with a prescription. We just kind of realized as she went into preschool and kindergarten, the teachers were a little concerned. And then we restarted school at a different school in first grade. And she, I'll never forget sitting in the school parent-teacher conference. And there was a whole table of teachers that all were just showing me her test scores and everything else. And I thought, there's really something going on here. What's going on? And then she had multiple fractures. And that's really when we started looking at things, because we took her in to the hospital, to the ER, and they had told me, and we only took her in because her foot was super swollen. We took her in and they discovered that she had four fractures and didn't feel any of them. So she has complete neuropathy in her feet. And so that was a whole whirlwind of being thrown into the emergency room in Cleveland Clinic downtown. They did a fantastic job, but we were thrown into a whirlwind of oncologists and different doctors and orthopedic specialists and every kind of specialist. And then we just kind of kept pushing and pushing because things just weren't adding up. And then we decided, finally, we met up with a couple different doctors, a geneticist. They thought she had brittle bone disease, so then it was rheumatology. And then that came back negative. So we did more genetic testing, and then just so many comprehensive tests and diagnostics that were done, and lab work, just tons of lab work and blood work. And over COVID, spring of 2021 is when we finally got the diagnosis.
Wow.
Of Olivia's condition.
How many years did this take in total? How many years was this uncertain period going on?
Pretty much your whole life. I looked back at, cardiology was looking at her as an infant. Right. And then there was a period of a few years where we thought, okay, well, maybe she's just on the smaller side on all of the percentiles. And then all of a sudden they were talking about growth hormone therapy and all these different terms that I'd never really been familiar with. And then when we received the diagnosis, it was pretty clear to us that it was a one parent full-time caretaking situation. And so that's when our lives literally just got turned upside down. I had no idea what it was. I had to make appointments with specialists that I've never even knew there was a specialist for that field, and just
right.
learn so much in such a short period of time. And then to watch my other kids like kind of surpassing her milestones. They were kind of, especially my 11-year-old was hitting things faster than she was, and just maturity level, and just there were so many arrows that pointed to something really being like debilitatingly wrong with her. And it just, sorry, it's just been kind of a nightmare.
I can't imagine how it must feel as a mom to be so in the dark and not know what direction to take next. From the time that you went in with the swollen foot to the time that she received her diagnosis of mitochondrial disease, how many years are we talking?
4 to 5 years.
Oh my gosh.
And I get on the computer and Google and research and
yeah.
told my husband, I have a bad feeling about this because we've checked off so many things on the list and there's only a few scary things left.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Dr. Parikh gave us the diagnosis and on a Friday, and then he just with Anthony and I, my husband and I, not with Olivia, we were over virtually. So it was like very challenging communication and
yeah.
just super, super emotional. He said, typically in this situation, Olivia's care is going to be a primary focus and like full-time position, really, just to manage her therapies, her paperwork, doctors, scheduling appointments.
Yeah.
And
that is a full-time job.
Not only just and doing continuous lab work and testing to see where she's at. So we have baselines for everything. So it took a long time to get the diagnosis. It was very bittersweet. It was like, okay, finally we have an answer, but it's definitely not the answer we were
right.
hoping for, and we've never even really heard of. So that presents its own set of challenges to explain mm-hmm. to people, because no one's ever really heard of it. It's
right.
like we learned about it in science class in grade school, but we really don't realize how it impacts our lives and our bodies and every aspect of our lives.
At that point, you're saying that your world was turned upside down, which is a complete accurate description. So at that time, were you working full time and did you stop?
I was working full time. I was an accountant for a gentleman who owned two different businesses downtown. So it was a lot of juggling, which I loved.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be busy.
Yeah, you've always seemed really passionate about the work that you were doing every time we've spoken.
Essentially, I went from working a full-time job and running two businesses. And with the months and the years leading up to Olivia's diagnosis, it was very challenging. I would be at work and get phone calls from the nurse's office consistently, just different random things that I would have to, leave work for, which was perfectly fine. But it kept presenting more and more challenges. And then scheduling MRIs and scheduling lab work and scheduling specialist visits, it all became encompassing, really. And I kept going back on and thinking about the diagnosis. And he said, typically with this diagnosis, one parent is the full-time caregiver for the patient and one continues to work. And this is due to the full-time schedule of managing appointments, all the necessary therapies, lab work, monitoring her illness, paperwork, communication with the school. And then on top of having to be available for unplanned illnesses or unplanned incidents that arise. So for me, I thought, okay, well, I'm used to juggling it all. And I'll just continue with occasionally working from home, go in here and there. And I ended up having to leave work early so often that it just wasn't like working out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we don't fit in that box.
You couldn't make it all happen. Yeah.
No, we just never fit into that box anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to explain it.
Was that hard for you to walk away?
Yes, it was. I found it increasingly tough to keep pace with the demands of my position and her increasingly worsening fractures and just the transportation, because she has been in a wheelchair so many times and needing additional mobility assistance. It just, even the simplest tasks felt insurmountable. It became clearer and clearer that pushing through was only leading to more setbacks with work, with me, with Olivia. Letting go of that part of my life, it wasn't just about losing the paycheck. It was a little bit of a loss of purpose and connection, a feeling of mixed emotions, grief, frustration, even guilt. I worried about how my decision would affect my family and our financial stability. It was a tough pill to swallow, but I learned the importance and necessity this life change was, and advocating for Olivia's health and more recently my own health. It's crucial to recognize that saying no to work can also be saying yes to our health and our family priorities. Just Olivia's overall well-being and the whole family's well-being, that's my job now. It's the priority, that's the necessity, is that this is what my job is.
Well, I'm in awe of you as a mother.
Well, thank you.
And I so appreciate you sharing all of this with us. So let's talk about Olivia today. What are her biggest struggles, like on a daily basis?
Every day it's a challenge. I mean, she has a very difficult time waking up in the morning. Hmm. She's already waking up with super dark circles under her eyes. So she's already starting her day like with negative energy, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And then she starts her morning with meds and stretching, and then we get her off to school. She typically takes a rest break or two at school per day. She uses the elevator. She has a lot of foot issues right now because her bones have broken so many times that they're running. She had a foot fusion and hardware installation surgery last January. I apologize. And they inserted 3 screws into her foot last January. And the bone was supposed to incorporate the screws, and it's not incorporating the way that they were hoping. So this surgery is going to entail removing the 3 screws that are currently in and then replacing them and fusing bones back together. But eventually we're going to run out of areas to fuse. So we're really hoping that this surgery goes well in January. But it's difficult.
Gosh.
Every fall from like starting in September or October, Olivia's body just seems to go in a downward spiral. I don't know if it's the cold weather. She has she has spasticity issues. She sees a physiatrist for that as well. And she has mobility. She has orthotic ankle braces and foot braces that she wears every day, which unfortunately makes her stand out a little more at school. It's very challenging being as a girl in seventh grade for Olivia. She just stands out a little more than the other children, just even physically, because she is so much shorter than her classmates.
Mm-hmm.
So she is taking growth hormone therapy shots for that. We do the injection every night, except Sunday nights. She gets that night off. But school is, it's a full-time situation because we work so closely with the school to try to come up with accommodations, and she has a different grading scale as well. So she is considered disabled by the state of Ohio, and I think in general. The educational challenges for Olivia are immense. She grapples with attention, memory, processing, and retaining information. Frequent trips to the nurse's office became routine as her body struggled to just simply keep up. That's where we're at today, is she consistently goes to the nurse and takes a rest that just to make, be able to make it through the day. We had to carefully balance her academic needs with her limitations physically, incorporating rest breaks, adapting assignments to accommodate her fluctuating energy levels. Making friends has been a bit of an uphill battle since the start, especially now in seventh grade. We have tried our best as parents to work on educating the staff about what her disease entails. We also found it helpful when we did a presentation with her classmates, just as an overview of what mitochondrial disorder is. Because, I mean, if grown-ups haven't heard about it, how would sixth graders and seventh graders?
That's a really good point. Yeah.
So I sent over some tools that I found on the MitoAction website as well to help educate the staff, and then kind of a little bit of a slideshow. Every time I go in, they have some sort of helpful resources. So we did a presentation with the class, and what we did was we educated them a little bit about it, and then we let them do a Q&A session where they submitted questions anonymously so they didn't feel singled out.
That is so smart.
So the students were able to ask questions without Olivia really knowing who was asking the question, and Olivia could answer questions as she felt comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took over the rest. So, and we thought that that was really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Just not to draw attention to Olivia, but more, and not even really to explain her, but just to give her every benefit that we could for people to be more compassionate and understanding about what battles she's facing every single day of her life.
I think that was so wise.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I feel like kids always want to rally around other children. And as long as you're building and fostering that environment.
Right. Instead of it feeling uncertain and confusing. I mean, my kids come home from school and it's clear that, you know, a child may have learning differences, but or, you know, something different about them. And my kids have no idea what it is. And so I think that if they better understood, they could rally behind them a little bit better.
Right. I found myself just having to explain it so many times to people. And it's a difficult disease to comprehend in the first place.
For sure.
And it's just so rare. It's just been an uphill battle.
Yeah. All of this is just such an uphill battle.
Yes.
So how does life feel as a mom today?
Like I said, keeping up just with her, with everything. It's you think you're done for the year. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, January comes around again. And it's time to test for this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
And these levels need to be checked. And now she has her surgery coming up on January 13th.
Wow. And your other kids have needs.
Exactly. So that's difficult to just try to make everyone feel special and and important. And Olivia just, whenever she can do something for the other kids. And like when we went on the Dahlia's Wish trip, she was just, it almost empowered her.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I can finally give something back to them. They sacrifice for me every day, like just in different ways. And we don't look at it like that. We don't talk to them like that. But we know that we don't have a regular scheduled family lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And the other kids have had to just kind of
adapt to that.
Adapt to it. And Olivia just she is always including people and giving people hugs. And she's just such a warm heart and so kind and so innocent and naive and sweet in all the best ways, which is a little, presents a little more challenges now that she's in seventh grade, but we're getting there. She's just, making friends has been a challenge.
Yeah.
I feel like it's hard for people because it is an invisible illness that they don't really see her illness when they like feel if she's being, I feel like she sometimes gets easily dismissed or, you know, dramatic, you know, being dramatic sort of thing. But it's just important, I think, as a parent to do as much as I can to educate the staff and educate the people around her. Mm-hmm. Because if people understand what she's going through, then they can show more grace and more kindness to her and other people in general. And I just hope that just multiplies all over.
I think you're doing such a great job. I do. I do. So your family just went recently on a very special trip that you alluded to a minute ago. And yes, that was a trip through Mito Action. So can you tell us about the Dahlia's Wish program and where your family went?
Yes, I would love to. This is one of my most cherished memories with my family as well as Olivia's.
I can't wait to hear about it.
Dahlia's Wish is an incredible program. It's created by Mito Action. They grant wish trips to children living with mitochondrial disorder. It was inspired by a little girl named Dahlia Flaggart, and she heartbreakingly passed away from mitochondrial disease at a young age. One of her greatest childhood memories was her trip to Give Kids the World Village in Orlando, Florida. And this has now become one of Olivia's and our family's most cherished memories together. It truly has transformed Olivia and her siblings. They, like I said earlier, they've become closer, more compassionate to illness. It just fosters such a compassionate and kind outlook on life and all the people that they interact with. Dahlia's Wish has almost acted as wings of a butterfly to our family, fluttering away and just providing so much joy and happiness and hope for our family and Olivia.
I'm so glad that you guys could do that. It's so heartwarming, you know?
It was incredible. So we got the phone call that Olivia had been chosen to receive this gift of a trip to Give Kids the World Village in Orlando, Florida.
So is that in Disney?
So it's not in Disney. It's okay. A separate resort. It's absolutely beautiful. There's villas there that they think of everything. Everything's ground level, ranch, handicap accessible, mm-hmm. Pulled the wheelchair right in. They just, every step of the way, they made Olivia feel so important. So, but the trip itself was our family and being able to fly down to Orlando and be met at the airport. Olivia thought this was just so special. They had a sign for her that had her name on it. It's a Give Kids the World Village. And the woman there was greeting us, and she welcomed us and then took us to get the rental car, which they thought was so cool. And we got to drive into Give Kids the World Village, check in, and then they have little golf carts and they show you where you are. And there's just such special touches everywhere. Like even when we pulled into our driveway, they change out the placard. It says, "Welcome home." And then it says Schneider family or any family name on the board. So that was really cute and special. And it's just run by volunteers that do an incredible job.
It's run by volunteers?
There were so many volunteers there.
And
they were
asking.
Yeah, I was like, there were even teenagers and kids handing out cafeteria trays because it includes all your food. There's a big mm-hmm. cafeteria. And then, so what happened was actually my children saw all the people helping and then they started helping. And
What a great environment.
I know. They were like handing out the cafeteria trays. And then somebody, when we actually finished our trip, they said that we're welcome to come back anytime because my kids were like, can we come back? Can we volunteer? What can we do to help? What can we do to thank you for this incredible trip? How do we give back? Just in general, it just it was just such an incredible trip. So we received tickets to Disney World, all the Disney parks for 3-day passes, SeaWorld, anywhere you wanted to go, really. But Olivia's.
That's fun. What did Olivia want to do? What parks did she want to go to?
Magic Kingdom, of course. So we went there. In my head, I was like, okay, we can get here, 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 and here. But then, as with any chronic illness, and specifically Olivia's, you can't really schedule anything. It's all based on their energy level, the patient's energy level, what they can do, what energy they have stores for. Give Kids the World Village really did make all of our dreams come true. It was incredible. It's a beautiful property resort. It has a magical carousel in the center of all of it, and the kids can go on as many times as they want. There's a castle behind it. And what's a really special touch is each child gets a star that they get to decorate and then put on the ceiling of the observatory inside the castle. So they can look up and they're all part of a constellation of stars inside the castle. So it's just incredible, the little touches that they put in, and you could see all these little children's names and anyone affected by the illness. And it just gives you hope because you're looking up and you see all of these fighters and you just want to lift them up. So any way you can do that,
was powerful.
It was so touching and so powerful and so much fun. Olivia's favorite part probably was being able to have ice cream for breakfast every day because they have an ice cream shop there. They have, and it's open first thing in the morning for breakfast. So you could have a waffle with ice cream. And so the kids got ice cream, I think, 2 mornings for breakfast. And they have like a little nail salon. And so it's literally like walking around a little village, and it's so cute. And they have a tea party. They have all different events, family parties, just different things to keep everybody together if you don't have all the energy to get to the parks and do all of that, because that can be demanding. And the weather was a factor. Mm-hmm. And then they also set us up with a fantastic photographer. Her name was Maria. And beforehand, she had contacted me and we chose a date, and they include a photo shoot, a professional like family photo shoot around Give Kids the World Village, where you're able to just laugh and giggle. And her personality was incredible. So it brought out all of ours, and Olivia just thought that was so special. Like, oh, there's a photographer here. And it was incredible. It was just incredible.
Wow. So you guys are all on this like high of this amazing experience. And then you get your like professional pictures taken. That's,
yes.
I mean, what could be better?
I know. It was amazing because I didn't feel like I had to be there and capture all these moments and memories. Somebody was really taking a step back and doing that for us. It's hard when you're traveling around with someone, especially if they have physical handicaps.
Mm-hmm.
It's challenging as a mom to get even in a picture, really. So that was just a really touching and special way to commemorate the trip and to really we just had fun doing it too. Everyone was excited to get dressed up, and we all just kind of went around and had just so much fun. We kind of showed her everything, the kids' favorite little areas around the park and the resort and the pool. And at the resort pool, it was very quiet. There was really only two other families there. And my kids became friends with the kids in the pool. And one little girl was really ill, and they don't see that anymore. I don't think they've ever seen it. It's just incredible what Give Kids the World Village really fosters. It's very powerful. We cannot wait to go back and volunteer. The kids want to volunteer and help out, and everything just around it just makes
you
smile.
Kudos to you for pushing that. You know what I mean? If they want to do that, you thinking about the fact that you do want to make that opportunity real for them, that's such a big deal. Because it is difficult to travel. You have 4 kids and one has a lot of challenges. And for you to want to get down there and do that for other families, that is so amazing.
we would actually be honored to be able to ever do that. So it just, I think that's really, really important.
I give you so much credit.
I don't know how we could ever show our gratitude. And it was just incredible.
We've talked a lot about Olivia, and I know she's so very important to you, but I think it's also important to talk about how you haven't had the easiest few years either. Are there any known connections between you and your daughter's illnesses at this point?
We're not exactly sure. There is something going on at the mitochondrial level.
With you?
They believe that. Okay. So,
What have you been experiencing? Tell us that first.
So about 2.5 years ago, I thought I had poison ivy or poison oak.
I thought they thought you had Lyme disease.
I did have Lyme disease.
Okay.
I have two strains of Lyme disease. So I increasingly became more and more ill the fall of 2022. It got really bad and I was hospitalized. And they found that I had viral meningitis. And then we later found two strains of Lyme disease that are neurologically decompensating. And
so were those related? The viral meningitis and the two strains?
No.
Of-
oh, and pneumonia. How? So that's what happened.
Oh my gosh.
I had pneumonia. My illness, yeah, it was pneumonia. And then we, in the emergency room through a lumbar puncture, we determined that I had viral meningitis, which I was hospitalized for. After that, I haven't really been able to walk properly. I've been using a walker and I haven't driven in 2.5 years, driven a car. So my limitations have really impacted things overall and have also added a layer of doctors and constant doctor's appointments. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, I'm waiting on Igenex testing. So
So you did genetics testing.
I'm going to. I have to. I'm being instructed to by my doctors.
Okay.
So I'm actually waiting on a brain MRI. I have to do a brain MRI spec scan to try to rule anything out in my brain. And then we are just moving forward with trying to get me to heal, but nothing's really connecting in my nervous system. They said my nervous system was completely wiped out. So it's as if my motherboard was completely cleared, is what they said. Everything needs to reconnect in my nervous system. And I've just had a ton of symptoms and side effects from this illness, and I'm still not better. So we're looking at the cellular level of things.
Wow. So the meningitis is behind you.
I was told I have chronic viral meningitis.
Oh my gosh. And then the Lyme disease you continue to carry, correct?
Yes. Once you test positive for that, I think it remains in your system.
Oh my gosh.
Was testing positive for a ton of viruses. So they're not really sure what's going on.
Okay.
So I have a lot of doctor's appointments and functional medicine appointments to determine what exactly is going on and have the Igenex testing done for the mitochondrial disorder. To really cancel it out would be amazing if we could do that or have an answer. Olivia's mutation, they don't believe it's her mutation. She has the DNM1L, which is very rare. And
it didn't affect you in childhood.
No. So it could be adult onset.
So her mutation could be adult onset.
I'm not sure about that exactly. I might not have her mutation. It could.
Right.
She's very rare. Mitochondrial disorder mutates over time.
Have others been diagnosed with her mutation?
I believe so. I don't know how many.
Yeah.
I've tried finding that out.
That's what's so tough about mitochondrial disease is it appears in so many different ways. There's so many different types. You know, when we were at the conference together, I mean, there were people on all different sides of the spectrum, you know?
Yes. And that is what is challenging. And it's hard when you can't find research on it or you can't find a lot of studies on it. I did meet one woman at the conference that I met you at, and she was a researcher from Israel. And she actually said that she has a patient that has Olivia's condition.
Oh.
So I'm working on getting in contact with her.
Okay.
Just to find out any more information and just what I can do to just in general, I think the knowledge is power. And the more I know about it, the more we could do for Olivia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only going to help.
Maybe there's some therapies or something that they're doing that maybe, you know, for some reason your team hasn't thought of yet, you know? And it might just be nice to connect with another family. I hope that you're able to make that happen. I know this is all happening in real time, you know? So it's like we record these podcasts and it's like, this is happening to the families at this time. So, you know, there's no final answers yet, you know, but Angela, hopefully you'll continue to share with us your story as you go along, you know, being a friend of Mito Action and participating in the podcast.
Thank you.
You know, we're entering a new year, 2025. What are your goals this year? I feel like life can feel so overwhelming. So when you think of some goals for the year, what are you looking to accomplish?
I just want to give my family the best life possible.
Yeah.
And just happiness and joy and just joy in the little things, the little moments.
Mm.
They're not little. They mean everything.
Right.
Our goal is just really health. Without your health, it's tough. Health and happiness, really. And it's a little bit, it's tough because I know the mountain that we have to climb in January with Olivia's surgery. Every time, it's not good for her system to consistently be given anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
And so with each surgery and with each procedure, there's more and more worry. And January fills us with both hope and fear, I feel like. The fear of the recovery process, complications. But despite everything she has been through, Olivia just remains so remarkably resilient. And I'm very proud of our family and how resilient we've all become and how strong and how close this has really helped us become. We're a family of snugglers and we just love on each other all the time. And this just brings us a little closer together.
Mm. I do. I feel the positivity when we talk. I know that you see the good in everything. And I'm so glad that you've been able to share your story with us. And if you guys go back and volunteer at the Village, I would love to hear about it.
When we volunteer.
Even better. Even better. What a great answer.
I feel like getting Olivia out of this environment where it is so cold as well. Helps a lot too. So it could be like a really great thing to look forward to for when the weather turns or just to give her a little escape after all the cold months.
And the Village already has such amazing memories for her. So I'm sure that it could be, you know, those weeks leading up to the trip are all so, you know, the trip, planning the trip and getting excited for the trip. That's half the fun, right?
For sure. Even when Olivia was awarded the trip, was gifted this beautiful trip, they made even that part so special. They sent out a videographer.
Ah!
And they sent out a box beforehand, like a little gift box. And it had Olivia's name and a countdown calendar and a note that explained that she was gifted this amazing trip. And so we had the videographer come and then we put the box out of the front door at the front door. And so we said, oh, I think a package just got delivered. And so she went and picked up the package and had her name on it. And she unwrapped it and opened it up. And that's when she found out she received the trip. So that was incredible. She was overjoyed. The videographer did a little bit of an interview with us. And then we went from there. And then we hit the ground running with planning the trip. And that just made it all the more special because she had a countdown. They had something to look forward to.
Uh-huh.
They were trading off between her and her siblings, trading off days to a race on the dry erase countdown board. It was really cute. It was so sweet.
Wow. They did everything right. And look what the impact it had on your family.
A huge impact. An impact that'll last forever, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure Dahlia's mom, Jessica, is a wonderful, wonderful woman. And I can't wait to send her this episode and make sure she listens. She's going to be so filled with joy at hearing your story and the way you tell it.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate that.
Thank you
that.
So much for sharing with us, Angela. Thanks
Thank
for being
you for
here.
Having
and I
me.
I wish you so much good luck over the next couple months, year, as you, you know, battle and continue to go up this hill. And I know you can do it.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you saying that. I'm truly just inspired by all of these children fighting this terrible, debilitating disorder.
Yeah.
They give me the strength, and Olivia, her bravery, her grace, her courage, always looking for the silver lining in things, has just been a constant source of inspiration. Yeah. And it reminds us, really, in the darkest of times, there is always light. And mm-hmm. that's why we always say, keep on shining, Olivia. Just oh. keep on shining. Just keep on shining, baby. Like we oh. say that all the time. So I feel like Dahlia's wish, her light will shine forever with us as well.
Oh, and I love hearing that. I know her family will too. Thank you, Angela. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.